And welcome to Right Spokane Perspective on this Monday episode. We are talking to a candidate today. Of course, we do these candidate interviews for you, the listeners, so that you can get all your family, friends, and neighbors turning out to vote with more information than three bullet points on an attack ad or a palm card, because these interviews, you get to know the candidates more and understand their policy ideas and issues and how they will represent us as citizens. We'll jump into that conversation with candidate Brian Danzel. And well, we're hoping there's a lot of people that are opening their eyes to a lot more than just God's grace, but also, you know, the fact that we need wisdom and we need people with wisdom representing us. And right now it seems like all we have is a bunch of people that think there's an endless credit card in the taxpayers and our great-great-grandchildren that are going to pay off this debt that we've got ourselves into. And it is Congress that has the power of the person. We have a congressional candidate on the line with us today in Brian Danzel. Thanks for coming on the show today.
Hey, thanks, Tim and Shannon. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk with you and reach some folks, hopefully, but more than anything, have just a good conversation.
So for the edification of the listeners, you know, just briefly tell us, you know, who's Brian Danzel? What have you done with your life and kind of leading up to this congressional run?
Sure. Well, thanks, Tim. Yeah, I'm a county commissioner in Ferry County, where I've been for 2 years, a commissioner. And then previously, I was also a commissioner in Ferry County from 2010 to 2014. And then I was also a Washington State Senator in the 7th Legislative District. And I served the people there for 3 years and some change before I was appointed to the Trump administration, where I was the advisor at a National Economic Council and the United States Department of Agriculture. And I advised the new administration on everything from oil, gas, and mineral exploration leases on public lands in the West to forest plans to kind of anything having to do with agriculture or rural economic development, frankly. And then after a pretty long time there, I moved back from D.C. to Spokane, and I was named the state executive director of the Farm Service Agency, where I was the director there for a while. And then finally, President Trump appointed me as the regional director of the USDA, which covered the entire Pacific Northwest region and had oversight over 6 states and multiple agencies within each state. And so after that, I got back, like I say, into the county commission here. And now with Kathy's announcement not all that long ago, threw my hat in the ring for a run at the 5th congressional district seat.
So that you've got some experience in a number of things having to do with obvious issues here in Eastern Washington when we're talking about agricultural lands and the federal government's impact and regulations. So you yourself know a little bit about farming, apparently.
Yeah. And so, yes, it was a great honor, frankly, to serve in those roles and work on everything from trade to regulations to the taxation code to I was an advisor on the 2018 Farm Bill. And Tim, I'll tell you, one of the things that was probably the most rewarding for me was being able to go to bat for our producers in Eastern Washington when it came to those trade situations, because we were really totally getting taken advantage of. And for folks that don't know, the agricultural economy is just quite a bit different than the regular economy, frankly. The government has been involved, heavily involved for a number of years, but really involved since the 1985 Farm Bill. And so most of the commodities in Washington State, for example, are for trade purposes, whether it's our fruit over in the Wenatchee Valley or what we're talking about here would be the Washington soft white wheat, which is grown from Spokane all the way down to the Tri-Cities. And we've got, and it's really interesting, we've got I'm not trying to nerd out here or anything, but we've got some of the most incredible growing conditions in Eastern Washington where there's little to no need for irrigation even. This is dry land wheat farming is what it's called. And so it has to be the right temperature and the right climate and the right soil types for anything to even grow there. And Eastern Washington has the right mix, evidently. So kind of the point being that all of the markets in Asia are always in huge demand for Washington soft white wheat because they make most of their dumplings and their noodles with them. So when we were at the height of our trade, quote unquote, trade war during the Trump administration, there were a lot of opportunities and ways that we had to get creative to try to be able to serve our farmers because the Chinese government and others were trying to, you know, hurt our farmers and our producers first and foremost is in retaliation to President Trump not letting us get taken advantage of in other sectors of the economy. So it was an interesting thing to be able to put it all together. But the most thing that you really do realize, Tim, is you realize just how important the farm economy is to like all of Eastern Washington.
It's huge. I'm glad you were, I guess I could call it a gluten leverage. You use some leverage with the amount of wheat that we grow here. But a lot of folks don't realize either that, you know, the gem state next door to us, Idaho, the, you know, state, I guess vegetable is potato, where in Washington state, we actually grow more potatoes than the gem state. And, you know, like you say, it's those growing conditions that are optimal for many of these crops. And we also have, you know, wonderful irrigated land as well because of the Columbia River Basin project and the dams that don't just produce energy, but also produce a lot of jobs in other areas, as well as in agricultural lands that have irrigation because of that. So there's talk about tearing out dams. There's also talk about changing the designation of a potato and turning that possibly into a commodity. You stayed up on any of that lately?
Yeah. So the dams, yes, I have. The dams, first and foremost, are just, it is just so frustrating. I mean, I know and remember you well enough, Tim, to know that it'll drive a person with common sense such as yourself incredibly nuts just to watch what's going on with the dams, because not only for the irrigation, as you said, because the Columbia Basin Project was actually a brainchild of the Franklin Roosevelt administration. And if we ever could finish it off, not only will we supply redundant irrigation waters to our farmers throughout Eastern Washington, and just, it would just, I can't even tell you how much it would multiply what could be produced there. But also, along with that, as you well know, those dams create redundant hydropower, electric hydropower. So kind of the thing that just, right, for just anybody that's normal, you know, that gets up and goes to work, they have to ask themselves the questions of, how are we going to do that? Breach the dams, get rid of all that irrigation opportunity, get rid of all the redundant energy, and then also pile on with an electric vehicle mandate.
Right. Electric car. We're just going to go out into the woods like we used to. You know, we talk, I don't know if you ever did this when you were a kid, but you're out there in the woods, no power. You know, of course, kids these days with their cell phones, you know, you just got to plug into a currant bush. It's insanity. And not only that, you know, we talk about the lithium batteries, the car batteries, and all this electrification. For one, we talk about it on the show all the time. It's not green. In fact, if you go back and listen to a show I did earlier in the month, it was Electrification Friday, and looking at what they're trying to do with Eastern Washington and creating these wind energy fields. Can't really call them farms because they're not farming anything. They're just planting 600-ton bulbs of concrete all over the place that our grandkids are going to have to tear out. And they do it with diesel. They build them with diesel. They are going to have to tear them out with diesel. They're not green. They're expensive. And on top of that, with the dams and the energy, the cleanest, greenest, environmentally friendly battery on the planet is a river. When you got that kind of power behind you, you don't have to wait for the wind to blow, the sun to shine. Yeah. You don't have to turn on an electric generator that's run on diesel or natural gas. You just have that water sitting behind a dam, and you can create power right now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And also, and we've kind of left out the fact, too, Tim, that this is all predicated on the return of the salmon, which down the river, just a, not even a day's drive, they're gill netting them by the thousands, you know?
Right. Well, because they're allowed to gill net them on the reservation lands, right?
Right. And so the idea that, like, they're just such a moving target, you know, if it was like, if there was any kind of like a idea of like what we needed to try to accomplish, but there's never going to be that. And then the other thing too is, and I've said this publicly, and a lot of people think that it's a little bit too maybe blunt, but the other part of it too is I just rank human beings above a fish. And so of thinking, like, we are living beings also. And so I have nothing against the fish. I love them. But I love people better. And I think that I'd rather have, like you said, a future for my children that doesn't include living in teepees and amongst windmill farms and everything gone to solar and everything except for, you know, because if you really look at these people, the people that are pushing this, they don't like any form of power. They don't like nuclear. They don't like hydro. They don't like anything. So I don't really know.
They just like stuff that profits certain individuals, and by the way, multinational and places that are not friendly with us, like China in many ways, that can start buying into these so-called green technologies that are not green at all. The only green that's involved is all the money that the taxpayers subsidize it with, because, of course, wind energy doesn't run on wind. It runs on subsidies. And we're paying for that while multinational corporations are getting buy-in on these subsidies to build them. And I want to go back to the dams as well, too, because, yes, we need to, you know, obviously there's fish ladders, there's different technologies we can do for wildlife. But if you tear out the dams, we're going to be missing a lot more things than just the hydropower, because the fish are all going to die because of the amount of silt that's behind the dams. It's going to take many, many decades, even if they could tear them out. For one, we're not going to have electricity. We're not going to have the farming. But we also, when we talk about people, Eastern Washington feeds the world. We really send these commodities and this food all around the world. So there's going to be people in countries that are going to, you know, suffer and have, you know, probably back to starvation days. You know, we have less people starving on the planet than any time in world history. And if you take the barges off the river, because if there's no dam, there's no water for the barge, and you're not going to be able to get this wheat that's grown in Eastern Washington to market, where it's going to go all over the world and feed people who would otherwise be hungry.
Yeah, I totally agree, Tim. Yeah, and I got to see it with my own two eyes. One of the most concerning things when you're talking about that, it's things like that, by the way. So it's things like this, and it's things like the ever-moving regulatory climate that are responsible for why the average age of the farmer in America just keeps going up, because the kids don't want to inherit that nightmare. And the parents, when I worked at USDA, I got to know a lot of these producers. I mean, it's kind of like how people talk about they don't, for the first time ever in our generation, they don't want to feel comfortable sending their kids to college because of how much brainwashing goes on at higher, quote unquote, higher learning institutions. But the same is sort of in effect with the farming community, because folks are telling their kids, you know, I wouldn't go be a lawyer, go be a police officer.
Well, they need their kids to be a lawyer, because so they can continue the farm. Because if you're not, if you're a farmer and you don't have an attorney, you're not going to be a farmer much longer, because there's lots of folks that would like to chase you off your land with conservation credits and windmill farms and the so many things that are going against Eastern Washington farmers. Again, with candidate Brian Danzel for Congress. He is a commissioner in Ferry County currently. Go to danzelforcongress.com. We are talking about federal policies, mostly about, you know, the agricultural lands, the things that farmers and property owners are concerned with as far as feeding their families and other nations as well. But there are things that are addressed that we need to address that affect Eastern Washingtonians here in the 5th Congressional District as well. We have the immigration issue. We've got I think it's like six generations down the road is when they're going to be able to maybe start paying on the debt. You know, our great, 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 great grandchildren, because we're spending $1 trillion now every 90 days as a federal government. And Congress seems to just not hold the administration accountable when it comes to where that money is going. So, you know, if we lose another $1 trillion and don't know where it went, whether it's the Pentagon or whether we're sending money overseas for wars that have not been declared by Congress, we're going to continue to see the spending go out of control. So let's bring Brian Danzel back on the show with that. You know, what are your thoughts on some foreign policy issues and things that are going to affect our overall environment fiscally and otherwise?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the number one, especially on the heels of the news of Iran launching an offensive against Israel, which thankfully was, you know, pretty much a nothing burger. But with that being said, I look at how much we've just fallen off the face of the earth when it comes to world standing since Joe Biden's been in office, you know, and it started with Afghanistan. But you can see how weak the other world leaders see us. And you can see how weak the folks see us at the southern border. I think, you know, so many of the things that we're talking about relate to, honestly, Tim, and I think this is what drives us nuts. Why don't we just enforce the laws that are on the books, number one, to begin with? That would be one good start. And we don't do that. because then some judge in some liberal part of the country will take it up on appeal, and they'll grant it the wrong way, and they'll give a bad opinion and a bad ruling. And so anyway, we've gotten into this deal where the judiciary has gotten too big of a foothold in trying to interpret and then remake their own policy. I really think that's a huge problem when it comes to this. And so I hope that Donald Trump gets reelected. I think he will. But I think that one of the things that has to happen is so many of the bureaucrats within the federal government have got to go, and we've got to start over. And I really do believe that. As it pertains to immigration, you know, one of the things that bugged me, I'm sure you'll remember this because you seem to remember a lot of these things, but it was Republicans in the Washington state legislature that voted for the HOPE Act, you know, that gave illegal aliens free college tuition money. That was Republicans. And the same year, they voted for the highest gas tax in the history of the United States of America.
Yeah.
And I'm really proud that I'm the only candidate in the race that voted no on both of those, you know. And so when people start saying these really great things during election time, they say, oh, we got to close the border. Oh, we got to save the dams. But then they didn't vote against, you know, the Dream Act, when it's a total magnet policy that obviously brings hordes of people to a state where obviously they're going to come here if we're not going to punish them. And not only that, we're going to give them free college money.
Yeah. Well, and we used to live in a state where everyone knew their driver's license number, but most people don't now, because we had to change our driver's license number because Washington State was, you know, giving driver's licenses to people that weren't even residents in the country legally, but maybe weren't even residents in the country. They're, you know, just sending them everywhere, Washington IDs and driver's licenses. And so obviously we had to change our driver's license numbers because our state government was not following the law and were, you know, basically offering quasi-citizenship through government ID that, you know, helped people gain illegal access to jobs, which became another magnet to Washington.
Totally.
But we're also giving free health care and welfare.
Oh.
And at the same time, we're like, well, how come they're not stopping this scourge of fentanyl? You want to talk about a war. If you lose 100,000 people annually, I would call it a war, and we're just allowing it to continue. And it's because we don't drug test for welfare. We're not taking the drugs off the streets because we can't put people in jail. It's a mess.
No, it's a total mess. And I think you mentioned something that's near and dear to my heart. I was just talking to my wife about this the other day, where the United States of America's response isn't to do anything you just said, isn't to crack down on the border, isn't to try to put an end to this fentanyl. The response that I've seen here in local government is that they just want to be able to buy Narcan for everybody.
Well, we buy the Narcan, but we're actually subsidizing the problem, because where are the drugs flowing? Yeah. Through government housing. Who's,
of course,
you know, taking the drugs? Most obviously, it's not people that are going to work.
No, no. And that's the thing that's kind of like last night we had a Lincoln Day dinner here. And Tim, I know you're going to remember this, but do you remember how cool of a city Spokane, Washington was 30 years ago?
Yeah, I rode my bike through downtown all the time. I had no, you know, my parents were fine with it. And I, you know, we actually had a couple hobos that I got to meet, and they were just kind of antisocial people, but they didn't trash the place. You know, we didn't have graffiti covering everything we had to paint over. It was a different place.
A different time and place. Well, that's kind of the theme of my campaign. I want to make it like Spokane was 30 years ago. You know, like, we have the technological capabilities now. I guess one of the things that I look at, this isn't even political, this is just as a person now, just as a dude talking, but don't you ever just sit back and think, like, man, we've got so much technological capability at our fingertips. If you could somehow meld that with the values that people had, like back in the 1950s, or maybe there was a resurgence in the 80s, I would say, but if you could meld the two, technological capability and the amount of information at our fingertips now that we've never had at any time previous in the history of man, plus the right values, we could live in such a cool time and place. I really do believe that. I have hope still, and I know that you do too.
If we utilize technology as well as the human traffickers, drug traffickers, and the homeless camps have, I mean, they are able to find resources. They've got chat groups. They can do drug deals. They can, you know, find new places to camp when they get kicked out of a spot. You know, they're utilizing the digital space.
Sure. Yeah. And like Antifa, you know, and places like things like that are utilizing the digital space. But yeah, if we could, that's kind of my point, is like, I don't really know what the full report is going to be on all this access to all this information with social media and the 24/7. You know, when we were kids, man, it was like a week long news story or news cycle or whatever, maybe a month if it was a slow news time. But it's like now it's not even a day. You know, people used to say the 24-hour news cycle. I think it's more fragmented than that. I think it's like
2 hours.
Gosh, did I yeah, did I see that today or yesterday? I can't even remember when I saw it. Where did I see it? Social media, or someone sent me a deal from Twitter or from Facebook or whatever. And I don't know, do you consider that news? You know, I don't. I think that we've got one problem that we've got in this country is we've got so much access to all this information coming in, and virtually none of it is checked for at all. And the media has no interest in doing that because, of course, they each single, you know, Fox has an audience that they're trying to reach, and MSNBC has an audience they're trying to reach, and CNN. Yeah, and I don't think they have I don't even think that there's like even any interest in being accurate.
Well, and they have a lot smaller audiences they used to. There now there's YouTubers and people on social media sites that have more followers and more audience on a regular basis than those networks show. So I think the information digitally and the concern, I know that Congress was just working out some issues there, but we're looking at how it's affecting our teens, and we're really not looking at how it's affecting our adult populations. Because one of the problems we have, you know, when this technology started coming out, if you had a job, you had the luxury, if you made enough money and you could pay your bills, that you could have this technology. Now we're handing it out for free. You know, the homeless individuals, the drug addicts, we're handing out phones to cartel members to deal drugs between all of our Eastern Washington cities, about the, you know, the triangle between, what is it, Spokane and Tri-Cities and Yakima. And,
oh, yeah.
And so we're actually subsidizing that activity. It's a big problem. I think there's some pretty simple solutions. You know, when you start busting the drug dealers, close the border, drug test for welfare. And we used to have a work requirement. Now, one of the problems I'm seeing too is the jobs report. They're saying the federal government's doing a great job, when really, if the government's creating the jobs, then it's a net loss for the taxpayers, and that's not going to help us with the debt. But what we're also seeing, where American-born citizens, the current people that are here, are actually losing jobs, and the jobs that are being created, oftentimes they're part-time jobs, and so the American workforce that's already here is working two jobs, and the jobs are going to foreign-born, whether they're legal or illegal. That's a long-term structural issue that we have to deal with in short order, or we're going to have some real problems.
Oh, I agree totally. And the only people, by the way, that right now say that we have a strong economy are somehow working for the government. Nobody else is saying that. I mean, go buy a house, you know, go buy a car, go buy
groceries,
you know, a dozen eggs. Yeah, go buy a loaf of bread. I mean, it's honest to goodness. I used to be able to walk into our local, and I love our local grocery store. I'm not hitting them, but it's just everything where I could, you know, $50 would be a pretty good load of groceries. And now it's, you know,
a bag.
Four or five items.
You know? Well, you know, your grocery, we can't blame them, because, you know, it's those evil semi trucks that deliver all the food to that grocery store, because they've had to buy diesel that in Washington State is, you know, $5 a gallon.
Exactly. And by the way, highest gas tax in the country, and we are still paying off bonds that were taken in during the Mike Lowry administration, Tim. And I don't even know, as I'm sitting here right now talking to you, when that was. I think Lowry was governor in 92, maybe 1992.
Yeah.
96. So that's how far away. So like when people ask me, how long do you think it'll take to get the North-South Freeway done? I go, well, Lowry, Locke, Grigwire, Inslee, between about 2056 and 2064 would be about my best guess.
Well, I've seen us pay for it twice. You know, when I first got involved in politics about, you know, two decades ago, well, actually, even let's say 2014-ish, it was going to be $700 million to finish the North-South Freeway. And that was while they still hadn't gotten to Francis yet. And then they got to Francis, and they're like, well, it's going to be 800. And I think we're closer to a billion now. And the closer we are to done, the more expensive it is. So I think that, you know, obviously things like that, where we're already paying really high taxes, our government spending beyond its revenue, not just in our city of Spokane that we're in here with a $50 million hole in the budget, and they want to raise taxes. Yeah. But we've got the state level. Our state budget has doubled in a decade. It was $35 billion, now $72 billion, doubled, more than doubled in a decade. And our federal government's doing the same thing. How do we solve that structural issue? If the American household, if the household in Eastern Washington is looking at their budget and they say, well, we're making $50,000 a year, got this little family, we got to pay our bills, but we're actually spending $130,000 a year. That's what the federal local governments are doing. you can't do that in reality. How do we stop this? Because that's what's causing that inflation at the grocery store.
Yeah. First of all, I think that it's the voters have got to really look into who they're putting into every level of office. You and I have been talking about that for since we've known each other, how important it is to take a good look at local government, your county commissioners, your city council people down. Hey, you know, down to your school board, it's becoming darn important that you're really, really focused on who you're electing. So I think that's number one. I think that we need to educate ourselves on who these folks are and really try to understand what their agenda is, if they have any motives, what those might be, and if they're got the right values and the right things that we're looking for, you know, on the conservative side of things. So I think it starts there. And then the other part of it is, I think that we need a lot more courage, right? Like, yeah. I think that we need to fight back against the federal government. I think, you know, one of the things that the Democrats do better than we do is they play a lot better defense than we do. And I don't like that. I don't think that we should let them cede that position to them. They always file lawsuits and injunctions and try to jam up the works. And it seems like to me, our strategy is always flawed on the conservative side. Like, we're playing by rules that applied back when, you know, Democrats and Republicans were not all that much further apart than, you know, one or the other. But now, right. I mean, I just feel like the left and the kind of like about 75% of the Democrats in the Democratic Party that are office holders, I mean, they really do believe in like eliminating airplanes for the Green New Deal. And they really do believe in electric vehicle mandates.
Oh, no, they do. I mean, you want to talk about politicians and irresponsible spending. Hey, you know what? There was a bipartisan bill that funded the supplemental budget in Washington State. They're going to spend another $40 million so that your local schools can partially transition to electric buses, but the rest of the bill is going to be on you, the local taxpayer. And do electric school buses better educate our children? I don't think they do. They just cost almost three times as much.
Exactly. Well, that, and then you guys, I mean, you guys are probably the, I think you're the, I don't know if you'd say poster child or cautionary tale when it came to your childcare business. I mean, so there's a, like what they're doing to local governments, but how about what they're doing to small business owners? Mm-hmm. Just the most ridiculous things that you could ever imagine in regulations and assault on small business like I've never seen before. When you told me about some of the things that you were going through, you know, 10 years ago, it absolutely shocked me that that it was real. You know, I mean, like you probably remember my jaw hitting the floor because you'd tell me about things and I'd go, like, a sprinkler was left out? You know, or what, like that, you know, I mean, things like that, where you just go, this government, this was never meant to be a government and so I think having someone that understands that, Tim, and then having someone that is free of all the special interest money and all the big money donors and lobbyists and all that. And I've never done that, as you know, and I've never taken it, and I never had surplus accounts. And so I think I'm sort of a little bit like some people's worst nightmare, because I can just kind of speak in plain language, and I have a pretty good memory, so I remember how things happened, and I'm also not on the dole. And so when you're able to have those three things, you can have a clear conscience and you can try to help people. Well, for me, the thing that was sad about your deal, frankly, was that there wasn't even a real appetite for half of the people within Olympia to even take the issue up, as you saw.
Right,
the Democrats were, it didn't matter. You could have said anything that was the most innocuous, innocent thing in the world. They wouldn't have cared. They just wanted to drop the hammer, man.
They did.
It was it's like a control thing.
We saw the pandemic before the pandemic, and what it was government stepping on the small business. So your small child care was getting pushed out of business, but your big community centers, your big commercial entities were being encouraged to grow and were getting subsidies that added to their business. And we saw the same thing during the pandemic. Obviously, you know, Walmart and Winco, and you know, the virus wasn't going to hurt you there, but in the mom and pop little grocery store, you had to keep it shut down. So there's obviously, you know, government not making a good decision for the population, and it was the big players that got to keep their doors open and the small businesses got shuttered. Well, we're out of time for today's show. We'll have to have Brian Danzel back again before the end of the primary. That's coming up in August, folks. I know that the weather's getting nice outside. Everyone wants to go and play for the summer, but we also got to pay attention to what's going on, because primaries have results, and that's who you vote for in the general. So we got to get everyone informed and turning out to vote and being informed. Thanks, Brian Danzel, for coming on today. Appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. I really, really appreciate you. I really appreciate you having the show and continuing this legacy forward.
Danzel for Congress www.thebrownstudy.com. All that being said, we'll be with you folks again tomorrow.